This is Canada Immigration News Podcast number 97. Start with this.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah. So while those might be the exact official notes from the news desk, we're actually going to set the raw data aside today.
Right, because today is all about giving you a custom-tailored deep dive.
Exactly. Our mission today is to decode a massive, I mean, truly fundamental shift that's happening in Canada's economy and its immigration system right now.
Right, as of May 2026.
Yes, as of May 2026. And we're pulling all of this from a stack of the latest reports from Canada Immigration News. So here's the roadmap for where we're taking you on this deep dive.
Quite a journey.
It really is. We'll start with the macro view. Like, why do Canada's GDP and job numbers look like a recession but actually aren't?
That's a huge point of confusion right now.
Totally. Then we'll zoom in on how the federal government is fast-tracking permanent residency for rural workers.
Retention over recruitment.
Right. And finally, we'll look at how provinces like British Columbia, Yukon, and New Brunswick are using these hyper-targeted, basically sniper tactics to fix immediate labor crises.
It's going to be fascinating.
Let's jump right into that macro view. Because to understand these micro-level immigration policies, we have to understand the massive demographic engine driving them.
Absolutely. The national economic reality is the foundation here.
And look, the recent headlines sound really scary. Slower GDP growth is projected at just 0.4 to 0.5% in the near term.
Which is incredibly low.
Right. And a long-term average of only 1.2%. And then you see that employment could drop by 54,000 jobs in a single year.
Yeah, that's monthly losses of 4,000 to 5,000 positions.
Exactly. In February alone, payroll employment dropped by 60,200 jobs.
Mostly in transportation, warehousing, and retail.
Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine you're looking at a bustling factory that is actually running perfectly fine, but a huge wave of senior workers just retired all at once.
Or a generational exit.
Yeah, and there simply aren't enough trainees to take their shifts. So 54,000 jobs simply vanish into thin air.
Which looks terrible on paper.
It does. At first glance, you'd assume the company is going bankrupt, but then you notice something strange, like wages are actually going up, and there are nearly 500,000 open job postings on the board.
What's fascinating here is that this is the ultimate data illusion. Economists refer to this specific scenario as the demographic trap.
The demographic trap.
Right. With an aging workforce and lower immigration targets, Canada's labor force is physically shrinking. So it's crucial for policymakers not to misinterpret this as a traditional economic recession.
Because if they do,
if central banks cut interest rates aggressively, thinking the economy is failing, it could trigger rampant inflation. They'd be pumping cheap money into a system that just physically lacks people.
And the data totally backs that up. Despite the payroll drops, job vacancies remain incredibly stable at 497,200.
Nearly 500,000 empty chairs.
Yeah. And average weekly earnings actually went up to $1,338. So the demand for workers is still fiercely there.
Exactly. It's a structural supply crisis, not a demand crisis.
So if the overall worker pool is shrinking, Canada desperately needs to hold on to the temporary workers who are already in the country, right?
Especially outside the major cities. That's the real pressure point.
Right. Which brings us to the accelerated TR to PR, or temporary resident to permanent resident pathway.
This is a huge shift in strategy.
It really is. By 2027, Canada aims to transition 33,000 temporary workers to PR status.
And they are moving fast.
Yeah. In 2026 alone, the target is 20,000 approvals. And they've already completed 3,600 early in the year.
But the key here is who they are targeting.
Right. This focus is strictly on candidates who have lived in smaller or rural communities for at least 2 years. People who applied through the PMP or Atlantic Immigration Programs.
So they're already established in these towns.
Right. So what does this all mean? Is this basically a VIP fast pass for people already inside the theme park?
That's a great way to put it. Yes. No new applications are needed. The government is simply selecting from existing applications to speed up processing.
Just skimming the pool of people who are already here.
Exactly. The strategy here is to drastically reduce the reliance on temporary residents and instantly stabilize local rural economies.
Because they're the ones feeling that demographic trap the hardest.
Right. What stands out to you about a system that suddenly prioritizes retention over new recruitment?
Well, it tells me they're panicking about losing the people they already have.
Bingo. Integrating a brand new immigrant into a rural community takes years. The economy simply does not have years to wait.
So while the federal government focuses on retaining those rural workers, the provinces are getting incredibly microscopic to fill specific gaps.
Oh, they are getting hyper-specific.
Yeah. Let's look at the recent British Columbia Provincial Nominee Program, the BC PMP updates. On May 6th, BC issued exactly 333 invitations.
Not 300, not 350, exactly 333.
Right. And they aren't just taking anybody. It's highly specific. 117 healthcare workers, 121 in construction, 86 early childhood educators, and get this, exactly 9 veterinary care workers.
Mind that.
9, with minimum scores ranging from 100 to 115. And on the business side, the May 5th entrepreneur draw issued a mere 13 invitations.
Just 13.
Yeah, 8 base, 5 regional pilot, with a consistent minimum score of 115. Here's where it gets really interesting. Instead of casting a massive wide net into the ocean, hoping to catch anything,
right,
British Columbia is basically using a highly calibrated spear gun to hit exactly what they need, down to 9 specific veterinary professionals.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, BC has completely shifted away from general draws. They've moved to occupation-based selections aligned purely with actual on-the-ground labor shortages.
Which makes sense. A general draw doesn't help if a rural farm needs a large animal vet right now.
Exactly. And look at those 5 entrepreneur invites for the regional pilot. That is designed specifically to force investment outside major urban centers.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it perfectly mirrors the federal rural retention strategy we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the invite if you want to open a cafe in downtown Vancouver.
You get it if you're building a business in a small town that needs it.
Precisely. It's surgical.
Okay, so we just saw healthcare heavily targeted in BC's point-based draws, but other provinces are taking it a step further, aren't they?
They are fundamentally rewriting the bureaucratic rules.
Yeah, let's highlight 2 major provincial innovations here. First, Yukon. They've created a dual licensing pathway for U.S.-trained, American board-certified doctors.
This is a game changer.
It is. Instead of starting from scratch, Yukon just relies on British Columbia's College of Physicians and Surgeons.
Right.
One document submission gets a doctor approved in BC, which Yukon then accepts simultaneously.
Bypasses so much red tape.
And second, New Brunswick is expanding its practice-ready assessment program from 10 to 14 positions.
The PRA, yeah.
Right, the PRA. Internationally trained doctors do a 12-week supervised clinical assessment, and in exchange, they must sign a strict 3-year return of service agreement to work in communities with healthcare shortages.
They're legally locked in for 3 years.
Which, okay, why did it take until a massive labor crisis for provinces like Yukon and BC to just start sharing paperwork?
This raises an important question about the historical barriers of credential recognition in Canada.
Because it seems so obvious.
It does, but historically, provincial medical colleges have been fiercely territorial. Yeah. Every province operated as its own fiefdom.
Right.
But the demographic trap hit healthcare the hardest. They can no longer afford that bureaucratic sovereignty when rural clinics are literally shutting down.
Okay, but let's look at New Brunswick's 3-year lock-in. Is that brilliant, or is it just creating a miserable situation for a doctor who feels trapped?
It's the ultimate trade-off between speed and community commitment. The reality is, if New Brunswick licenses a doctor in 12 weeks with 0 strings attached,
they just leave for Toronto.
Exactly. The data shows they use that license as a springboard to a bigger city. By mandating that 3-year service, New Brunswick guarantees that rural areas actually benefit from the fast-tracked licensing.
They buy 3 years of guaranteed medical stability.
Right, and the psychological gamble is that 3 years is enough time for integration. They buy a house, their kids go to local schools, and maybe they decide to stay.
Wow, okay. So connecting the dots here for you. We started with a macro economy facing 54,000 job drops because of a retiring demographic.
The empty chairs.
Exactly. Then we moved to the federal TR to PR rural retention plan, locking the door so the workers we have don't leave.
Retention over recruitment.
Then we saw BC using hyper-targeted draws to find exactly 9 vets. And finally, we watch Yukon and New Brunswick hack the bureaucracy to get doctors into clinics faster.
It's a massive, cohesive adaptation.
It really is. But there's one final thing we want you to mull over.
Yeah, because even if all these strategies work perfectly, projections state that because of these lower immigration impacts and demographic shifts, Canada's total economic output could be 11% lower by 2060 compared to earlier expectations.
11% lower. That is a massive hit to the economy.
It is. So if the workforce physically cannot grow as fast as it used to, will fast-tracking visas and targeting specific occupations be enough to save the economy?
Just stopping the bleeding.
Right. Or will Canada have to rely on a massive, unprecedented adoption of AI and automation to bridge a productivity gap that human workers simply can't fill anymore?
Wow. Are we just going to have to build robots to fill those empty chairs?
It's a very real possibility.
Yeah.
Something for you to explore as this demographic shift continues.
Definitely something to think about. We'll catch you next time.